Blog Talk Radio.
Jean-Luc, Geordi Specs, mysteries on the holodecks, asteroids, triple droids, telepathic betazoids, transporter, deadly claw, visitor from L.A. Law, photons, no Kirk, captain has gone berserk, shuttlecraft, Council Troy, Dr. Crusher's little boy, Klingon rights, parasites, new heights, phaser fights, Data's head, Tasha's dead, Riker's hanging by a thread, celebration, transformations, everyone to battle stations.
Well, good evening, everybody. With that theme song, that means it's time for our monthly Comic Corner Star Trek Edition presented by Freakopolis Geekery in Whitehall, New York. We have a fun show planned for you guys tonight. It's going to be a busy show because we're going to try to cram an extra book in here. So we're going to be covering three books instead of two. So hopefully we can get that done for you guys. We're going to be talking about Transformers versus Star Trek issue number 5, which is going to wrap up that series. Q Conflict issue number 2. And the Captain Saru one-shot, I guess they're calling it. A double sized issue. We're going to cover all three of those issues tonight on Comic Corner. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to TJ from Freakopolis Geekery to get us started with a rundown. I guess we'll start with Transformers versus Star Trek. TJ, what do you think?
Sure. Yeah, I'd just like to say I'm really excited about tonight's lineup. It's an interesting mix of things. This is our last issue of Star Trek Transformers. We've been talking about it for about 5 months now. I don't think there was too many delays. So the story finally wraps up here in issue number 5. As you said, we've also got issue number 2 of the Q Conflict of this 5-issue miniseries. So we're sort of in the middle of that one. And then a one-shot. So it's a cool sort of eclectic mix from all different eras of Star Trek this month. It was a busy month for Star Trek comics. And I'm very excited to talk about all three of them, really. So, as we've talked about in the past, Star Trek versus Transformers, written by John Barber and Mike Johnson, art by Philip Murphy, is a 5-issue miniseries that sort of mashes up two very classic, mid-century cartoons, the Star Trek animated series and the very classic Transformers. And the two encounter each other. The crew of the Starship Enterprise, the animated series crew, so including a bit of an expanded cast, encounter the Transformers and the Autobots and the Decepticons on Cygnus 4, I believe. They've since departed there after a number of battling, a giant transforming USS Enterprise taken over by Captain Kirk and sort of mind-melded. And we're left now in issue number 5 with Starscream having just made it to Kronos, the home planet of the Klingons, where he decides, he's going to sort of subjugate them all and, put the Klingon Empire under his thumb. Of course, the crew of the USS Enterprise and I believe it's Fortress Maximus, right?
Yeah.
Fortress Tiberius.
Tiberius, thank you. Yeah. I was looking for it. They sort of hem and haw over whether or not to, break the border and invade Klingon space, in a sense. They decide, they kind of have to in order to save the Klingons, in a sense, and hopefully stop the Decepticons' march through the galaxy. On the way there, I love their sort of very cool solution to the issue of like human-sized people fighting giant transforming robots is to print a bunch of armored suits through the replicator and send out Spock and Sulu and other bridge crew members in these giant robot suits. That was so great. And the two factions sort of battle on Kronos. The Decepticons, the Autobots, and everything comes together pretty well for them in the sense that, the Decepticons are driven off, the Autobots and Federation sort of reign supreme and victorious. But this thing is just loaded with awesome nods to both the animated series and to the Transformers sort of canon. There's a Klingon line that is, you know, one of the Klingons say that there is more to us than meets the eye. Like, that's, you know, obviously a huge nod to that. Captain Kirk, when saying goodbye to the Autobots, says, "Live long, Autobots, and roll out." So very, very good there. Nice mashup. You know, that's basically like what the whole book is, you know, these five issues have been, is, you know, just the combination of those two. And it's been really, really quite successful. Lots of great dynamic paneling. The art is very reminiscent of the two cartoons. You know, it seems like the art's pulled straight out of your TV, really. And overall, this has been a really fun miniseries. I'm not a huge Transformer guy. You know, I know that holds a special place in a lot of people's hearts. And I certainly think they're cool, but this exposed me to a lot of new stuff, and I still was able to enjoy it quite well. So, you know, overall, this miniseries is just loaded with tons of fan service and great, awesome moments that you probably thought would never happen on the page or on screen. So I found it quite enjoyable. It was also very funny. Probably the funniest Star Trek book we've had since we started doing Comic Corner. Just loaded with tons of cheesy one-liners and great, wild happenstances and stuff. So, yeah, definitely recommend this. Quite enjoyed it.
I liked when all the Transformers, when they got the human-sized crew that you're talking about, if you look at the Transformers, you actually have a Scotty Transformer. And you actually have an Eric's Transformer with three arms, and each one of the Transformers that they build looks exactly like the person that's sitting inside of it. You know, we have an Asian Sulu robot, and all the Transformers look like the people, which I thought, oh, that's three arms. That's got to be Eric's. And yeah, the Klingon saying more than meets the eye was hilarious. But I agree, TJ. Overall, this was a fun book. It was a fun adventure, a fun journey, and it did. It felt like it could have come right off the cartoon. The cheesy one-liners and stuff, it was well done, well worth the read, and I really, really enjoyed it. What about you, Eric? What did you think?
Yeah, I was really into this series. I thought it was great. I'm a pretty big Transformers fan, and, you know, as you guys are saying, I absolutely love the mechs that they made for all of the different crew members. I think the mech for Emress was probably my favorite because it was, you know, it was four-legged and had this tail and looked very cat-like. I love how each one of them kind of recalled very clearly, like you were saying, Jim, which character they belonged to. I also kind of like in this, you know, the classic organic matter versus, you know, mechanized matter. You know, Soundwave tries to defeat the Autobots and the Starfleet mechs by using his Soundwave properties, of course. So he generates Soundwaves just like he would on the old Generation One show. And of course, who is not affected by that but the Klingons? And so in some ways, we've got three factions at the end of this book. We've got kind of the Starscream faction, and then we've got the Klingon Decepticon faction, and then we've got the Autobot Starfleet faction. Just love the way they kind of meld all these different things together. I thought it was kind of curious at the end. So, spoiler alert, in the end, Megatron is actually is actually being watched by the Klingons. He's a prisoner of the Klingons. They've got him all kind of wrapped up in the things that pin his arms and legs to the inside of their ship. And, you know, there's this scene where they kind of zoom in on Megatron's face, and I think he's supposed to be kind of looking ominous and maybe looking toward another possible Transformers Star Trek crossover. You know, they say something about they had to leave Megatron in the control of the Klingons, and so that's kind of where they leave the book. We don't really know how Megatron gets away from them, but they're setting up what seems like to me another possible story here in the future. So, love this book. Have always loved the crossing of these two franchises together, and it is a very entertaining story. And they, you know, they bring in Transformers from all different eras. You've got Generation One Transformers, you've got Transformers from Transformers Prime. So I just love the diversity of everything. Cool book. I hope they do it again.
It was a really good read. And how about you, Charles? You get the final say on Transformers versus Star Trek.
Well, one of the things that came up that kind of caught my attention was the fact that Starscream would go in and try to take over Kronos. And then Megatron pops in and says, yeah, you're at it again. Hit him, shoo him away, and do it himself. That is so how the comics were back in the 80s. There were occasions where Starscream would try something, and Megatron would just come in, take over, and say, I'm in charge. This is mine. It's like that is so reminiscent of how that series went. Once again, another great job. I kind of lost a little bit of the fight towards the end because I was getting tired when I was reading it. But they did another great job with the series. And they've done some great crossovers. I can't wait to see what they might cross over next.
Yeah, it definitely was a lot of fun.
Yeah, IDW is doing so much with their Star Trek right now. I don't want their runs to stop. It's like, keep it going.
You know, I've mentioned it before on the show, but how many of us would be so excited to have a transforming Fortress Tiberius sitting on our shelf at home? Please, Hasbro, somebody make that toy. It would be so cool.
That would be awesome.
I'll tell you another thing I saw that I so want. JK posted this. Eagle Moth UK posted a model they're releasing there. I wish they released in the United States. It's a U.S. It's an ISS Enterprise D. With the Terra logos on it, and the weapon systems on the hull, and they so question if that thing didn't come from Mirror Broken, if that's where they got that ship from. But I saw it, and I was like, oh, it's in the UK only. Oh, I so want that ship because that ship looks so much like I think the ship looked like in Mirror Broken.
eBay.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, when I saw that picture, Charles, the first thing I thought of was exactly that, the muffled Picard at the helm of the ISS Enterprise D.
And the Borg data?
So, Jamie, what did you think about Transformers versus Star Trek, issue number 5?
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, they did a very good job, and I mean, how can you not like the 1701 Transformers? Just the Enterprise, the Transformer just blows my mind. It's like Optimus Prime if Optimus Prime was the Enterprise.
It was fun. Definitely. Definitely enjoyed it.
Did anybody notice in that last panel where they have a trapped Megatron, though? Did anybody notice that there seems to be some leakage out of one of Megatron's eyes, almost as if he's crying? That threw me for a little bit of a loop. I couldn't figure out what was going on there.
Yeah, he looked kind of pathetic.
I know, and I expected him to look, you know, really pissed off, but I didn't expect to see tears coming out of his eyes.
Yeah, no, it definitely looked like he was crying.
Huh. I wonder why they made that.
Or maybe he just needed... Maybe he needed an oil change and he was leaking oil.
Well, that's what I figured. Maybe he just got punched in the face too hard. He couldn't handle
that's
it.
That's what he'd tell you.
Yeah.
Now, something else I had mentioned earlier is in this book, we see female Transformers. But in the movies and in all the movies, we never see female Transformers. However, there's a brand new movie out called Bumblebee, and if you watch Bumblebee, you'll see female Transformers in the Bumblebee movie. So, yeah. there are female Transformers, and they're really there. And you see them in both.
Yeah, and those female Transformers were originally introduced in the comic line, in the IDW comic line, you know, post all the old Transformers shows that we're all kind of familiar with. But even in the older shows like Beast Wars and Beast Machines, they started introducing female Transformers back then. But of course, these days with Transformers Prime and all of the new line of toys and everything, characters like RC are pretty standard to have in almost every book. And I think it's great because they always lend something different to the story that's not just dude with big gun. There's usually another layer there too in the comics, which is cool.
Yeah, I noticed that when I was watching Bumblebee, there was all these different Transformers that weren't in the other Transformers movies, and they reminded me of the Transformers that are in these comic books that we've been talking about, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, and at the risk of kind of like going down the multiverse route, one thing I've always appreciated about Transformers, the franchise, is that they have always allowed multiple continuities to exist at the same time. You know, you don't necessarily have to start at the very, very beginning and go to the very end, and there's not necessarily just one timeline. They throw in other stories here and there, and sometimes they're set in the distant past, and sometimes they're set now, and of course, now they just rebooted the whole Transformers line after the Omicron saga. So there's two new issues of brand new Transformers books that focus back on the days of Cybertron. So they've always been able to do that. And it's one thing that I wish that Star Trek fans would be a little more open to, a little bit more multiverse. You know, why can't we have four different Spocks or three different Kirks happening in different universes? So I think Transformers has always done a good job of mixing that all up.
And don't forget, there's also a Transformers card game as well. So Transformers is making a comeback.
I am a big fan of that. I'll tell you what, I play that Transformers card game all the time. And if you guys haven't had a chance to play it, it's a lot of fun. It's a good time.
Nope, I haven't. I have not seen it. So I don't know anything about it other than what you guys bring up on our Facebook page.
Starter sets, I think, are only like $15, maybe. You get four bots and a bunch of cards, and if we ever want to talk more about that, I'm all for it. But yeah, it's a great game that's actually taken off like hotcakes right now.
Well, as we said before the show started, we only have three more episodes of Discovery. One episode of Orville, I think. And we're just starting to talk about the Twilight Zone, so we have 10 episodes of the Twilight Zone to cover, and then we're going to be looking for material. So we could probably talk about the Transformers game if that's something you guys wanted to do. And since we're talking about the Transformers game, let's talk and Star Trek. We got a lot of Star Trek Attack Wing stuff coming out for Star Trek. TJ put a post up. I think there's five faction packs, TJ?
Yeah, right now, WizKids has them listed for May. We'll see if they pull through on that. It seems unlikely. But, yeah, we got five upcoming ones. Very excited for that. And then the oddly marketed single-player sort of pseudo-starter set as well later this year. And OP kits. So there's some stuff in the pipeline.
Yeah,
good
so we'll be
on
able
that,
to actually.
Because somebody who went to one of the latest conventions talked to the CEO and the company, and they said there's no releases till sometime this summer. So unless things have changed since the convention less than a month ago.
Yeah, it's been hard to keep up with the Star Trek Attack Wing release schedule. I believe it was somewhere in the fourth quarter of last year when they started announcing some of these new faction packs, and it seems like there's been delay after delay. So we're all keeping our fingers crossed because we all love Star Trek Attack Wing, but we're all a little bit dissatisfied with the release schedule and how things keep getting pushed back. Once all the new content comes out, it's going to be great. But you know what? I'd give up all the new content just to get some starter sets in the store.
Well, I think this new one-player game will can work as a starter set for new players. It comes with the damage deck, the dice, the templates. So I think for new players, they could pick up this one-player starter set and jump right into the game. Well, listen, we got to take a quick station identification break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about the Q Conflict issue number 2. Don't touch your dial.
Hi, this is Eric from Trek Talking, here to invite you to join us for the best science fiction-themed podcast on the Internet. Our elite team of Trek-sperts are here to discuss Star Trek and related sci-fi content, and we want to hear from you. Call into the show Thursday nights from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. on the East Coast, and we'll get you on the air to share your opinions. We have faith that you'll call.
And we're back, and like Eric said, the number here is 646-668-2433. That's 646-668-2433. Give us a call and talk about any of these great Star Trek comic books that we're reviewing right now. And with that, TJ, what's going on with Q Conflict, issue number 2?
Yeah, this was my most anticipated book of the month. I really, really enjoyed the first issue, left on a great note. Anything with the very powerful members of Star Trek canon is super interesting. And then we get all of the captains. So if your favorite captain is Sisko or his crew, then you get them. If your favorite captain is Kirk, you get him as well. So it's got a little bit of everything for everyone. It's written by Scott and David Tipton, the Tipton brothers. They're pretty well known for their work on Star Trek IDW books. They've written a bunch of them. And pencils by David Messina. So this picks up pretty close to right where it left off. The four very powerful entities are drafting their teams of captains and crew based off of the original series, Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager. So we have a mix of all those captains and crews. And they finish their drafts. We get a cool lineup of who's on everybody's team. And then Q basically sets them into their very first challenge, which is to go to the Iconian's home world and find their gateway engine, which allows them to create gateways all around the galaxy. The first one onto the planet and in possession of the gateway engine, the first team to do so is declared the winner of that round and gets to keep the gateway engine for concurrent rounds, which is quite a huge advantage. But they send off all the teams, but not before Picard and some of the other captains agree to some sort of base rules, which are harm or kill each other for the sake of the games, and they won't cause harm to other beings, like native beings on planets. Picard also requests no timeline changes from Q, as he knows him so well. And so then we get a couple scenes of the crew sort of acclimating to their ships. It seems like the captains got to go to their home ships and everybody else went along with them. I loved the scene between Kirk and Worf. Of course, during Kirk's time in the captaincy, the Federation was at war with the Klingons. Of course, Worf ends up on Kirk's team. And, Kirk reassures him, like, hey, man, it's cool. Seeing you in that uniform makes me think that maybe, our species aren't so different. The crews pretty quickly get to the planet, and they begin to beam down, and that's when things get sort of a little more competitive. Riker really shines through here, sticking it to his captain by slowing down his shuttle. And then it's sort of an away team-like romp through the Iconian's homeworld until finally Janeway, I believe, ends up, and her team end up in possession of the gateway engine. And they sort of take the first round, but Q promises that the next challenge will be much, much more dangerous and serious. have higher stakes. So, yeah, another really cool issue. You know, it's just great to see all these captains and crews interacting with each other, seeing how their strengths play off each other, even though they are from totally different timelines. It's a very structured book. Eric mentioned this last week. You know, very sort of plainly laid out in a sort of Star Trek way. You know, like nothing too crazy going on here in terms of the art. As always, IDW gets the likeness really on point. Sorry. So, in general, yeah, I mean, a pretty solid second issue. I love that Quark was the final one to be drafted. He did not seem super pleased about that. So it opens up really funny and just turns into sort of a really cool romp between all of our crews. So, yeah, quite enjoyable. I'm looking forward to the rest of it. This is going to be, I believe, 5 issues long. So, you know, we're almost at the midpoint now, and I'm looking forward to the next one.
So what do you think, Eric? Q Conflict, issue number 2.
You know, there were some parts of this book that I really liked. TJ actually mentioned probably my favorite part already, that interaction between Worf and Kirk. I thought that was just brilliant. I wondered how they would handle that if those two – or if anybody from TOS was to actually meet up with Worf, because you know, not only is he a Klingon, but he's a pretty formidable looking Klingon. You know, it's a straight up adventure story. There's not too much depth to the story at all, I would say. There's some thrills, there's some chills, there's some weird monsters. The pairings of the crew of the captains with the crews that were drafted for them are kind of interesting. I kind of like towards the beginning of the book, there's this great page where they show the lineup that each of the immortals has kind of chosen as their warriors. And, you know, you get people like Worf and Quark on the same team, or, you know, it seems like every team has at least kind of one logical, you know, Data / Spock type character on them. So I did like that part of it. The story is just kind of like, you just kind of got to go with it because honestly, I was just a little bored with the story. I mean, I think some of the interactions are cool and, you know, there's certainly nothing wrong with the art or anything like that. It's what we've come to expect from these types of books. And I've always enjoyed the work that IDW is putting out, but I was just, I don't know, I was a little bored with the story. That being said, I do like the fact that they brought the Iconians into it. And one of the things that I've kind of been noticing about the comics is that they seem to be filling in some of the holes of things that we've talked about that didn't end up coming out on Discovery. So, for example, we were all wondering what the Red Angel was. And, you know, one of at least my big theories up front was that it was going to have a connection to the Iconians. Well, we didn't get that, but here we've got Iconians in the comic book. And you know, we'll go to the Saru comic later, and there are some things that happen in there that we kind of wished had happened in the show, but they didn't, but then they happen in the comic. So I like that they're bringing all of those aspects into this. Overall, I think I liked issue 1 a little bit better than issue 2. I'm going to keep reading the series, but this one was just a little lower on my enjoyment meter, so to speak.
Yeah, I agree, Eric. I there was so much going on and with so many crew members, and we have 4 Star Trek series all happening in one book, and it's a lot to cover, and a lot of characters don't get the time that they probably should. In fact, I think that who was it? Was it Sisko's crew really didn't do anything in this particular book that I recall, and I just with so many crews and so many characters, I think a lot of them get left out, but I'm going to keep reading it.
It very much came down to like the captains and their first officers being all mixed up and, you know, interacting with each other. A lot of the tertiary characters sort of got left behind, but we've got, it's actually a 6-issue miniseries. So there's 4 left, you know, maybe some other people will get some more page time. in the future. I suppose we'll see.
And what about you, Charles?
I've enjoyed the series. I think the one thing I guess I'm spoiled on is J.K. Woodard's artwork. I thought several of the characters kind of, and some of the shots were rather faded. You really didn't get much detail on them, so it was hard to tell some of the characters at times. And it would
It's interesting. I was just going to say, Charles, you know, I think you're right. He did such a good job on some of them where the likenesses are very good, but then some of them you're kind of like, wait a second, who is that again?
So I wouldn't mind a little extra detail on some of the shots. But I'm enjoying the story. It's a little hard at times, I need to keep up with who's where. I think hopefully once we get going, it'll be easier to pick up. So I did really enjoy Riker's interaction of saying, oops, or I guess it wasn't such a good idea to put Riker where he was, because Riker knows a little too much, especially when it comes to any of the Enterprise's ships. And I like the interaction where they're saying, oh, you're a little paranoid. Yeah, well, how I am.
Yeah,
But overall, I'm still enjoying the story. I'm always curious what Q's up to. And I think it is kind of funny seeing some of Q's interactions, trying to make sure we keep Q honest. So I'm looking forward to seeing what we get out of issue 3 on this one.
And
what do you guys
about
think
you,
about
Jamie?
This whole
pod?
Oh, sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead.
What did you think about issue number 2 of the Q conflict, Jamie?
Yeah, I thought it was very well done. I did like the scene with Worf and Captain Kirk. That's always good to see those two mingling. And as far as Q picking his teammates, I thought they did that panel very well. I liked the artwork. I thought it really stood out. And then I liked the last page of the book, they did that. The art was really good in that too. And then I think they laid out all the dialogue boxes very, very well in this particular issue.
Yeah, this was a good issue. I kind of agree with Charles and Eric though. Some of the artwork was a little bit lacking, but overall I enjoyed it.
What did you guys think of the whole concept of an Iconian gateway engine, that there's kind of this key that helps operate all of the Iconian gateways? What do you think of that concept? Because I don't think that's a concept that's been brought up in Star Trek before.
I think it's good to
I
see
don't
a little bit of
originality
coming out of IDW.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they got to keep the engine, but what good is the engine without a gateway to operate it?
Well, and that's what I was wondering about. I mean, I kind of like that, you know, that they ended up with the prize at the end. You know, Q says, okay, if you win it, then whoever wins it gets to keep the engine. So I don't know what that means, though. Does that give that person control of all the Iconian gateways? Or, I mean, it seems like a very, very coveted prize for kind of our first contact here, or our first contest here.
Yep, I agree. Well, you know that Q's not going to make it that easy.
No, he's not. He never does.
Definitely not.
Yeah, I'm still sort of waiting for the other shoe to drop in this series. It seems like, I mean, we're still sort of in the setup, but, you know,
yeah.
Makes you wonder if we're going to have all the crews join together and rebel against the super powerful beings, or, you know, if it's going to be much more straight-laced than that. With 4 issues to go, you know, I'm wondering where this is going to go, or if each issue is just going to be sort of an adventurous romp. I have to hope that the next couple issues, like, it was cool to see an away team one, but I would love to see how all the ships fare against each other, not just the crews. But, you know, I imagine they'll get into some sort of tiff with the ships at the center of it. So I'm looking forward to that if it comes to that as well.
Mm-hmm. Although the Defiant is one of the ships, so I don't think any of the other ones stand a chance.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, the original Enterprise, pretty outclassed by all of them.
Pretty
so.
Outclassed. Maybe the Voyager could keep up for a while. Maybe the E. I mean, the E's got pretty good shields and stuff, but man, it's the Defiant.
Yeah, but
no, Q's gonna take over the Defiant, and then the Enterprise is gonna come in.
There you go.
No, don't forget, in First Contact, they put the Defiant in the shuttle bay on the Enterprise E.
Yeah, it's a tiny little ship.
So
it sure is.
It's a tiny ship.
But it's got
more guns than
anything, right?
And it's got shielding and a blade of armor and whatnot.
And a cloaking device.
But, yeah, well, we don't know if that one, if it does or not. Does it?
Well,
it
actually,
had one
no,
for
I guess,
Dominion
I think,
War.
Yeah, it had one for the Dominion War. And so what'd we decide? This was Sisko from season 3, right? Because he's badass bald Sisko. So I think the Defiant was around by then, wasn't it?
Yeah, because after it got destroyed, after the Cardassian dissipation weapon and they blew it up, the Romulans had given him a cloaking device. And after that point, I don't think the Defiant had a cloaking device after it got destroyed, did it? I don't recall.
Not
after,
no.
Don't
no,
remember.
The new Defiant, I don't think. No, it was just the first one that did.
Yeah, just the first one. So, and this version of Sisko is the first Defiant, I think, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, so anyways, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the book I've been waiting to talk about, a Captain Saru one-shot. Don't touch your dial. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Jamie from Trek Talking, here to invite you to join us for the best sci-fi themed podcast. Our elite team of Trek-sperts are here to discuss Star Trek and sci-fi themed content. Call 646-668-2433 Thursday nights from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. Eastern Coast Time. We can't wait to hear from you. Live long and prosper.
And we're back. We're going to be taking a look at Captain Saru, the Star Trek Discovery one-shot. So, TJ, why don't you fill us in on what this book is about and what we can expect?
Sure. This is one of IDW's oversized annual issues, which means it's on really great paper with a really nice binding. And it's got extra pages of content, so let that kick us off. That also comes with a little higher price tag. It's $7.99 instead of your sort of average $3.99 or so, but I think it's worth it. It's a substantial single issue on much nicer quality stuff. But yeah, this was an interesting issue. It takes place. Well, I'll get to that in a bit. It's written by Kristen Bayer and Mike Johnson, also sort of veterans of IDW Star Trek lineup, with art by Angel Hernandez. Just want to give credits to those guys. Oh, and it says here, I didn't realize in the front there's a sort of, this story takes place after the events of Season 1 of Star Trek Discovery, before the arrival of the USS Enterprise. And I really enjoyed, I'm kind of glad I missed that in the beginning, because I enjoyed piecing that together throughout the issue. It starts with this really funny scene of Saru talking about how blueberries power a starship, which is obviously, analogous to the spore drive. But as you might have surmised, it was just a dream. Then Saru and Captain Michael have this great scene in the Louvre, discussing the dream and art and what that means to be a member of Starfleet and a captain. And then we finally get the sort of establishing shot of the USS Discovery in a dry dock sort of being repaired for a time. We learn that This is, you know, most of the crew is away on leave while the Discovery gets repaired. Ensign Tilly has gone on to the USS Dorothy Garrod, which Admiral Cornwell tells Captain Saru, summons Captain Saru, or at the time Commander Saru, and tells him, like, that it has gone missing with Tilly on it. So she needs Saru to take the captaincy for a time and take Michael Burnham and sort of the skeleton crew to go find Tilly and the USS Dorothy Garrod. Saru sort of reluctantly agrees to, and they end up finding Tilly in a sense. At least they find the USS Dorothy Garrod has been sort of marauded by Orions and their crew. And they're making some large demands after capturing the away team sent to rescue Tilly and the captain. They make some large demands and ask for the USS Discovery in exchange for the Starfleet members. Obviously, Captain Saru is reluctant to do so and hatches a plan to get the crew members back and keep control of his newly captained ship. He does so with some subterfuge and tricks up his sleeve. I love that he uses, like, parts of the ship to sort of take out much of the Orions because he knows the ship so well. Of course, he deserves to be captain. He knows every inch and system on the ship. He does so successfully, and Saru and Michael Burnham end up having a wonderful dinner in Paris. Unfortunately, as we know, going into season two, Captain Saru is short-lived in that he becomes once again first officer for the magnanimous Captain Pike, who has been great. But you do feel for Captain Saru. You know, you knew he wanted the position, even if he sort of said he didn't. But throughout this book, the likeness is always great. I love that Saru takes on, like, different sort of manners of speaking depending on the position he's in. If he's in the captain's seat, he's very confident and commanding, despite his remaining ganglia at the time. But then when he is talking to Michael Burnham in the sort of prologue and epilogue, he, you know, chooses his words more carefully. He sort of tiptoes around things. So it's interesting the change of character just the captain seat gives one. The art itself is pretty solid. It reminds me a lot of season one of Discovery. There's a lot of really dark tones, grays and blues and purples. This Discovery looks very much like Lorca's Discovery instead of Pike's Discovery. So we begin to see that transition happens after sort of this stuff. And really, yeah, it's about Saru and Michael Burnham, and they have a great relationship, probably the strongest one of the strongest ones, but in Discovery on the whole, and a great issue for Saru. I also, it was, you know, featured Michael Burnham heavily. It wasn't surrounding her. It's like one of the first Discovery stories we've gotten, besides maybe The Light of Kaelas or the books, which are heavily mentioned inside this one shot. I've not read them, but I'm sure Eric and Charles can speak to some of the nods to the books inside this one issue. But yeah, it features Michael Burnham, but it doesn't, like, revolve around her, which I found quite refreshing. It more revolves around mostly Saru, a little bit of Tilly. And, you know, I love those characters, so to see them get some more plot, you know, points and stuff is great. Really solid single issue, you know, don't need a lot of context outside of maybe the first season of Discovery to understand what's going on and enjoy the issue. Also, praise to IDW for the quality of their books. You know, that matters when you're holding a book in your hand. When you read, you know, 30 comics a week and you get one that feels really nice in your hands, you notice that sort of thing. So I appreciate it. Quite like this issue. I always look forward to the one-shot annuals. Both of them have been just knocked it out of the park so far.
And Jamie, what did you think? I know you really like Saru. What did you think about this issue?
Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was really fun and interesting. It was just a little, some of the lines I can recall that I thought was absolutely was the part where I think it was Orion was calling Saru a googly-eyed lizard. I just thought that was hilarious and rude at the same time. Little Full House reference, how rude. But anyhow, I thought that was really, really funny. And the part that I also liked was the scene where he is back and Tilly is just kind of flying off and Stamets visiting his family. I thought the artwork was great, and I liked how they took up two pages instead of just squishing it on to one, so the ship kind of overlapped when you opened up the book. And then I also liked the scene where they were in Paris. I thought that was really neat. And kudos to whoever did the art in this. Of course, the two people on the front of the book that did it, which I can't remember their names. But anyhow, they did a great job. They couldn't have done it better, and it felt like you were reading the episode of Star Trek that would have been in. And I'm kind of glad that we were able to see Captain Saru as an actual captain briefly, which still makes no sense why he wasn't able to lead the Discovery in the episodes as a co-captain. But, oh well, we got it in this book, so I'm happy now. So I can forget about that because I'm happy because I saw it in the book. So it was very...
Yeah, I think you're right, Jamie. This book read like an episode. I could easily have seen this book being an episode of the TV show. It was very well done. And how about you, Eric? What'd you think?
Boy, of our three books that we read this month, this was definitely my favorite. Best story, best overall artwork. We've already talked about some of the nods. It does recall at least two Star Trek novels, one of which I haven't read yet, but it recalls Fear Itself, which is the story, the novel about Saru, and he actually references it in this book because this is not the first time that Saru has been in the command of a starship. Of course, it's his first time at the helm of the Discovery, but you can tell that he's had command aspirations for quite some time, and we find out at the end of this book that the only reason that he didn't get captaincy of the Discovery was his experience level. When he and Michael are sitting there having dinner together, she talks about how Starfleet's decision was already made. And so it wasn't anything that Saru did or didn't do during this mission that caused him not to get the captaincy. But, probably my favorite page in the whole book is one that they've been showing a little bit all month. I don't know if you guys ever check out the open channels section in the very back of these IDW books, but there's usually some pretty good stuff in there. And one of the things that they've been showing in a few of their books is the spread where they show the Discovery and they're kind of describing where everybody is. And they show this beautiful picture of the Discovery with a shuttle kind of coming, or several shuttles attending to it. They show Tilly on a vessel heading to where her father is, which is kind of the setup for this whole story. They show Stamets visiting Culber's parents after his death. And so that was kind of a really nice touch that would have been great to include in the show that they didn't include in the show. So I'm super glad that they put it in this book. And then it also features a character that we've seen a lot more of in season 2, Joanna Owushikun. She is apparently summiting Mount Everest for the third time in her life. So this book kind of establishes that, she's kind of a badass. I mean, summiting Everest is not easy, and here she's done it three times. So I really like that that one page. It just kind of sets up all these great stories. Lots of other nice little subtle nods here and there that I picked up on that I'm sure are intentional. For example, when they go, when Michael and Saru go to the Louvre right at the beginning of the book, they're standing there next to the Winged Victory statue, which is a pretty famous statue. And of course, it looks like a headless angel. So, a little bit of foreshadowing to those characters of what they would find in season 2 with a connection to a different kind of angel. And let me see. Yeah, I think those were the main things I wanted to mention. I just loved the way that this was put together. It was cool to see the design of that science vessel that Tilly was on. And in fact, you know, when they said the name of it, the Dorothy Garrod, I was like, well, who's Dorothy Garrod? So once again, Star Trek proves to be educational as well. I don't know if anybody else looked her up, but she's a pretty famous archaeologist from the 30s and 40s. And so it was cool that the ship was named after her, and I would have never known who she was if it wasn't for this comic book. So love the story. Love that they brought the Orions into it. Love that Saru was able to push his boundaries, even though he hadn't lost his ganglia yet. So lots of good things going on in this book. And I liked it.
And I think it sounds like we might have just lost Uncle Jim.
I think we lost Uncle Jim.
Okay, well.
Wait to hear what he thought.
Well, yeah,
I'll
Charles, what do you got?
You guys hear me? I don't. Something weird going on again?
Now we can.
I'm talking. And
got you back.
So what do you think, Charles? You get the final say.
I definitely enjoyed this one. I think when it comes to annuals for Discovery, IDW's got two hits right out of the park. They did great with issue one. They even continued on with issue two. I, for one, actually noticed in the beginning when they mentioned where they were placing this issue. And I always thought, like, wow, that's a good spot to put a issue like this. Put it right there between season one and season two. Right in the middle of those two spots. Like, perfect spot to have it. We get to see the fact that the Discovery's in repair. It's in repair dock trying to get stuff done to get it fixed and bring it back up for season two. I thought the wandering to the museum, I thought was interesting how the two of them had different perspectives on artwork. How Michael thought about the statue that Eric mentioned. And Saru didn't mention it. I'd be curious what Saru thought of it. And that Saru didn't want to go see the Mona Lisa. That he wasn't sure his ganglia could handle it. But I also like the true creativeness that Saru had trying to do with the Orions. I thought he really did show some good command skills in there and how he was able to trick the Orion. And I thought they did a great job with that. And I can't wait to see what IDW does next with Discovery. I think we're due for a new comic series coming up. Let's hope for some more Discovery.
Now, TJ, isn't there a new Star Trek IDW book coming out?
There is. Star Trek Year 5. We expect that this month. Let me just get a date for you. Number one should be hitting on the 24th of April, so the end of this month. We'll have it in time for the next Comic Club.
Yeah, so the next Comic Corner, when we do it, we'll have a brand new Star Trek book to talk about. And Q Conflict. Issue number 3. So tune in for that. Make sure you guys tune in for Trek Talking and Beyond Thursday night, 7:30. We're going to be talking about Star Trek Discovery and the brand new Twilight Zone series, which is currently airing on CBS All Access. I know they dropped 2 episodes, but we're going to be talking about the first one, which is actually the second one, Nightmare at 30,000 Feet. And if we have a chance, if we have time, we'll talk about The Comedian, but we're definitely going to do the Nightmare episode, because when I looked on their advertising, they said that was going to be the pilot episode, but then they aired them backwards. So that's why we'll be going to be talking about episode number 2 first. And you don't want to miss out on this Discovery chat. Just give you a little bit of a teaser. What do you guys think? You think we're seeing the origins of the Borg, which is floating around all over the internet? I have my theories on it, and we're going to talk about that on Thursday. Is it the Borg, or is it not the Borg? Interesting question. What do you guys think? Yes, no, maybe. We'll talk more on Thursday, but
I don't want to. I want to tip my hand too much. I'm skeptical, but man, there are some pretty good theories out there that if it was the Borg, I think it would actually work with the show. I think it's kind of funny how some people are adamantly, no, 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 it's not, and some people are adamantly, no, 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 it is, and then some people say, please don't let it be the Borg. And, you know, I think, admittedly, I felt that way 6 months ago. I think I specifically may have even said, please don't bring the Borg into Discovery, but this past episode was pretty darn compelling, so if they do take it that way, I think I'm along for the ride.
We'll have to wait and see what happens.
We are the Borg. Lower your shields and surrender your ships. We will add your biological and technological distinctiveness to our own. Your culture will adapt to service us. Resistance is futile.
Go away. Go away. We don't want the Borg. I remember at the beginning when they were redesigning the aliens that there was talk of redesigning the Borg and making them more steampunk. We'll have to wait and see. If this there was a line out of First Contact that made me think about this, and we're going to get into it a lot more on Thursday. But when Captain Picard gets captured, he says, "Well, we destroyed that ship. You were aboard it." And the Borg Queen says, "You think too linear." And that's what we're seeing right now on Discovery. People are thinking too linearly. Anyway.
Yeah, that's a word.
Yeah, linearly. Because the Borg, whether or not we actually see Borg drones, that's another question. But if we end up seeing Leland be the birth of the Borg, and we don't actually see the Borg show up on Discovery, I would be all aboard with that. I think that would be awesome. But we'll talk more about it on Thursday. So that's just a little teaser for you guys to make you tune in on Thursday. And the phone number is 646-668-2433. You can call and tell us, you know, what you think. Is it the Borg or isn't it the Borg? Is resistance really futile? And share your theories with us. And also don't forget to check out Stunt Trek with Uncle Jim and the Leslie Hoffman on Sunday night from 7 to 8. We had a great show talking about horror movies and Leslie's appearance in Nightmare on Elm Street. If you guys missed that, go and check it out. We had quite a few callers, and we had a lot of fun. Remember, no running in the hallway. And with that, it's time to wrap up the show, believe it or not. We only have a minute and a half left, so I got to say good night to everybody. And I want to say thank you to TJ for doing an excellent job wrapping up the comic books. And thank you to Eric and Charles and, of course, Jamie. You guys are awesome. And we'll see everybody again, same bat time, same bat channel next week. Have a good one, everybody.
Live long and prosper.
Good night, guys. It is time. Good night, everybody.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.